This is a Federal News Network podcast.
Welcome to Your Turn. Mike Causey here. Really glad to have you with us today. And today the subject is difficult one, in some ways very important, but very difficult one for the likes of me, people who are math challenged. And my guest today is Mike Meese, and he's going to be talking about this. But Mike, beforehand, would you give us your background, please, sir?
Sure, be happy to, Mike. Glad to be with you again. As you mentioned, my name's Michael Meese. I'm the president of the American Armed Forces Mutual Aid Association, AFMA. I've been here for about 7 years. Prior to that, I spent 32 years in the Army on a variety of assignments in the United States, over in Korea, in Iraq, and Afghanistan for about 32 months. My final assignment was as the professor and head of the Department of Social Sciences at West Point, where I headed the economics and political science program, and I retired as Brigadier General in 2013.
Well, we have very parallel, very similar careers. I'm an E5 who went to Fort Meade and Fort at Rucker, Alabama. So very similar backgrounds.
Well, General, we're happy for your service as well, Mike.
Thank you. You too.
You serve here on Federal News Radio.
We can congratulate each other. Thank you, sir. Hey, listen, in the first place, we're talking about all the stuff about payroll tax, and I see different initials, PRCC and that sort of thing. When we're talking about payroll tax, what exactly is this? Because I'm thinking it's everything.
Yeah, it's important that people kind of understand it. And because it gets taken out automatically every month, frequently people don't know what's part of it. It really, when we talk about it, it's the amount of money that goes into the Social Security payroll tax, which for every employee that is a W-2 normal wages employee, 6.2% of your salary goes to pay your half of Social Security. And then your employer also pays 6.2%. And so a total of about 12.4% of every person's income up to an amount well into about $125,000 goes into Social Security. And that's set in there under the understanding that if you qualify for Social Security, either because you're disabled or in most cases because you reach retirement age, then you can get Social Security payments based upon the calculations of Social Security. So that's something that nobody can avoid. Everybody has to pay that Social Security tax. And the only other part that sometimes gets confused is another tax of about 1.5% is paid in for Medicare, but that's separate from Social Security payroll taxes.
Okay, and it has nothing to do with federal, state, or local taxes.
So that's, yeah, in addition to that, you pay your federal taxes, you pay your state taxes, you pay local taxes, and those are the taxes that when people are saying we're going to raise or lower taxes, they're talking about federal or state taxes. That Social Security payroll tax is paid by everybody, and it's a flat amount, 6.2% for everyone.
Yeah, and well, that's very confusing. I can see the difference, and of course, it would require a federal law to actually suspend income taxes or certainly state taxes. So this is, as you point out, 6.2%. So for me, if this applied to me, and that's the next question, does it apply to me? But for me, does that mean if this applies that I will be, or maybe I already got a 6.2% raise?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. The president has the authority. He cannot forgive taxes, mm-hmm. but he can defer taxes. So based upon the corona crisis, I think everybody was aware, he deferred the payment for 2019 taxes from April 15th to July 15th. So it didn't change the amount that anybody owed. It just said you don't owe it on April 15th. You owe it on July 15th without any penalty. What President Trump said was in a memorandum on the August 8th and later promulgated with guidance from the Department of the Treasury, said that if employers chose, they could defer the Social Security payroll tax that employees would ordinarily have to pay for the months of September, October, November, and December. And that Social Security payroll tax would not have to be collected by their employer. And then, so it would be a net increase in the paycheck for those 4 months, deferring that tax until next year. And then the implication is that in the first 4 months of next year, January, February, March, and April, the employees would have to pay back those taxes that are deferred unless something happened, Congress took action to actually forgive those taxes.
So, and correct me if I'm wrong, is it possible that my employer, the Federal News Network, your employer, and say the federal government as a third employer, could all three have different policies?
Absolutely. It's up to the employers to make a decision of whether they not they would impose this, state governments and federal governments. In fact, within the federal government, Congress made a decision that they were not going to defer the payroll taxes. OPM, the Office of Personnel Management, and the Office of Management and Budget, the Department of the Treasury, made the decision for all federal employees and for all military employees that they would defer the collection of the payroll taxes that essentially has meant a raise for most people in the military and many federal workers. And I can talk about exactly who in just a minute.
Yeah, well, that seems very strange that they would get it, if, whether they want it or not, they get it, and I would not get it.
For Federal News Radio, again, most civilian employees, and I assume Federal News Radio and other large companies have announced that they're not doing it.
Yeah.
Part of the reasons why they're not doing it is because they thought it might be an undue burden if it was not forgiven for the employees to pay back in January. The other slight difference is it's up to the employer to make up those deferred taxes. So, of course, Federal News Radio would never fire you, Mike.
Never.
But if you did get fired in December, Federal News would be out those taxes, and they would have to come after you to pay those deferred taxes back. The federal government, on the other hand, has the ability to kind of track people because of their Social Security numbers, and they, when they're a future employer, they could go after those taxes. So that's one reason why it's a little bit easier for Uncle Sam to come after you than Federal News Radio would.
Do you have any idea how many people in the country, how many companies or employers and employees are probably involved in this? We know the federal government, we know the U.S. military, so you're talking about 5-6 million people there. But what about the rest?
Beyond that, I have not seen a lot of reports. Most of the reports that I have seen is that most employers are not, in fact, deferring the Social Security payroll taxes for their employees, and that has just been for those large companies that have reported. In my case, in the organization that I run, which is a nonprofit with 135 employees that takes care of veterans, we made the decision, in fact, not to defer the Social Security payroll taxes for exactly the reasons that I just stated. We didn't want to have a windfall for the next 4 months while it might mean a payroll tax reduction, a paycheck reduction starting in January.
I would guess as an employer, unless I was doing this for political purposes, but I'd say do nothing, because why create this quote windfall, the 6% for 4 months, and then 4 months down the road, you're either saying you're going to have to start paying this, or you get in people's heads that Congress will enact legislation that would maybe defer it or eliminate it completely. But, Ed, we need to take a short break here, but we'll be right back on federalnewsnetwork.com, 1500 a.m. Eric White, our producer, says we need to take a break, and we'll do that. Be right back. Hey, welcome back to Your Turn. Mike Causey here, and glad to have you with us today. And I'm so glad to have my colleague, if I may call him that, General Mike Meese, to explain the situation, because the first 1 minute of the show, I learned a great deal about it. The fact that it doesn't cover me, but it could. It does cover government workers and military people. Could cover most employers in the country, but probably is not. And that is this idea of the payroll tax deferral. And until we had this discussion, I wasn't quite sure what the payroll tax is. And I'm glad, because I was wrong. General, as you explained it, this is not all the taxes, right, that a person pays.
No, that's absolutely true. So if you look at your pay statement, if a soldier, sailor, airman, or marine that it applies to, and I'll get to that in just a minute, looks at their leave and earnings statement at the end of this month, they'll still see federal taxes taken out. They'll still see state taxes taken out if they live in a state that taxes income tax, and they'll still see their Medicare wages taken out. But what they won't see is their Social Security tax. And so that amounts to should amount to 6.2% of their income. And the same thing would be true for federal employees. They'll still see those normal federal, state, and Medicare taxes and local taxes if they have that taken out. But their Social Security taxes will be deferred, and they won't have to pay those back until January.
Well, I'm looking at something that my colleague Nicola Grisco wrote earlier this month, and the headline is What the Payroll Tax Deferral Means for Your Wallet and What You'll Pay Back in 2021. She's got a very good grasp on it here. She talks about the maximum on the wages, and it's going to primarily hit active duty military people and federal employees. And it also, there is a a calculator that we've set up that you can clock in your salary if you're math challenged as I am, and it will tell you to the penny what you're going to get in extra wages or apparently extra wages this year. But again, that begs the question: next year, you know, I mean, a cynic could say this is a political ploy, that this is a month before the election, and that we're going to give everybody many people a 6.2% raise. As it turns out, it may primarily be civilian and military personnel, but a sizable number of people. Have you heard anything about, and again, I don't want to play politics with this, but have you heard anything about how this is playing, how people are absorbing this and taking it?
No, I think a lot of people, it kind of surprised them. That's one of the reasons why it's great to have this radio show. For our members with AFMA, we put out an email that was very well received, and a lot of people clicked on it to understand more. In most cases, people are surprised by it. I think they're probably slightly happy to have a little bit more money now. But as they learn more about it, they know that they are probably best off saving that money. And the real message, if there was a single message to federal employees as well as military workers, is you ought to save this money, because it is likely that it'll have to be paid back. We can speculate about whether or not it may be forgiven, and that could happen. And if it is, that's great. This is a big windfall. But if it's not forgiven, you and your family needs to be prepared to pay this back starting in January.
Well, you know, be the devil's advocate here. Suppose it is forgiven, and there is a good chance that whoever wins the presidency, whoever controls the Congress next year, somebody has handed them a hot potato here. The people have 6% for 4 months of salary. That's a lot of money for a lot of people. And if you're not wise enough, as you recommended, to save it, then it's going to have to come out of your paycheck. And it would be very easy for a politician to say, let's waive this, or let's extend it another 4 months and then another 4 months until it finally goes away. But I've had a number of people call me, or primarily email me, and say, what, if anything, does this do to Social Security? You read various things. It's not on sound financial basis. It's better than it looks. Congress will take care of it. And an awful lot of young people, I think many surveys and studies have shown that the Gen X and the Gen Z people, not so much us, but the many younger people, think Social Security literally won't be there for them when the time comes. And older people And many politicians look at Social Security as the third rail of politics, and that is touch it and you die. But of course, nobody knows what it is. But do you have any sense about what impact, if any, this might have on the stability and the viability of Social Security?
Yeah, it's a very good question. And it's important to understand both the rationale for it and to make sure that your listeners understand the balance between the two extremes that you might hear out there. It is 4 months of Social Security paid for by a portion of Americans, not everybody. And it is the one way to depict it is that there's no impact. No, in fact, there is an impact, because if this was forgiven, then some amount of money would not go into Social Security trust fund that would somewhat undercut that. But it's a relatively small amount, looking at all the years and all literally 140 million workers paying into Social Security over all of their working years. This will have a relatively small impact on it. On the other hand, this is not a proposal, as other people have said, to end the payroll tax forever. And if you did end the payroll tax forever, in fact, Social Security would likely not be sustainable in the long run. This tax at 6.2% is set so that it pays in enough to be able to cover most of the expenses of Social Security, depending upon, of course, what Congress does. And right now, Social Security is set to stay valid based upon the Social Security actuaries well into the 2030s, and it would take some legislation to be able to make it solvent beyond that. But both political campaigns, both President Trump has not touched it in the last 4 years, and Vice President Biden has not mentioned anything about trying to touch Social Security. And so it is unlikely that Social Security is, in fact, at risk.
Well, you know, you look at the demographics of this country, and we're actually in better shape than many, particularly in Europe and in Japan. But we're getting older. The birth rate is down. I think it's at record lows, or certainly as low as it's been since the middle of the Great Depression. And you're just having the numbers here of fewer people paying in the Social Security system to support more people, older people.
Yep.
And again, I just think it concerns a lot of people that if in fact this is done, and it has been done, even though it applies primarily to the million or to people in the military and the civilian side of government, that something like this could go on and on. I can see them kicking this can down the road. I mean, next year, I'm a new member of Congress, a member of the House. I have a 2-year term. So, the day you're elected, you start running for reelection. Or if you have been reelected, you are still going to run for reelection. And in 2 short years, there is the election, and you have this decision made: do I have to pay back 4 months' salary or 6.2% of salary for the 4-month period, or do we kick it down the road, or do we invalidate it? And that seems to create another set of problems.
No, Mike, I think you're right that there would be a tendency to try to do that, and that would be bad, especially if that happened over and over again. I think doing things that are responsible with regard to protecting and saving Social Security is something that the broad swath of Americans could do. I'd remind you, you're old enough to remember back in the Reagan administration, they got together and the point at which we fixed Social Security at that point, the Greenspan Commission raised the payroll tax from 4.1% to the current 6.2%, and it adjusted retirement age from 65 to 67. And they did that just on people my age and younger. Your retirement age, I think, is still closer to 65. And so that made Social Security whole for the next 20 or 30 years. And for those young people that are out there, I think a reasonable approach, which again, no political candidate is advocating because it's still touching Social Security, might be to, for example, since people are living longer, still allow earlier retirement at age 62, but change the full retirement age perhaps from 67 to 70, just because a lot of people, especially with the internet, working from home and those sorts of things, are in fact working longer. Those kinds of things would make Social Security much more stable for a much longer period of time, especially for younger workers.
Well, let me take a short break here on federalnewsnetwork.com, 1500 AM, and then we'll be right back. Welcome back to Your Turn. Mike Causey here. I'm talking with General Mike Meese, who is knows an awful lot more about this payroll tax deferral than I do, and I've learned a lot since being here. General, before the break, we were talking about, and again, without trying to get political, but this is, we live in a political world, and this is, to some extent, a political decision. And one of the things you were talking about in the past, when people have reformed Social Security, naturally you raise the ages, the age of, for benefits. And I believe when the Social Security concept that we know it, I think it started in Germany under Bismarck, and someone did some actuarial checking, and they said, "How long do people live?" And they said, 58 years old is average. And they said, "Okay, let's make this starting date for Social Security 59. In other words, not many people are going to collect. And back when in 65, back in the 1930s, that was 65 was an old, somebody was long of tooth in those days. And so they've changed it. And they have raised the age for retirement for full benefits. But one of the things that I think many people don't quite grasp, because most of us don't ever have this particular situation, is above a certain dollar amount, and correct me if I'm wrong, there is no, you don't pay any Social Security tax or any additional.
Right. You pay the 6.2% of your Social Security tax up to the maximum wage, which is, and I don't have the exact, it's about $130,000. So you pay 6.2 up to that level. And the reason that it's limited to that level is it's not an unlimited payback once you retire. So every earning that you have counts for how much you're going to get back when you eventually retire and you get back from Social Security. And so that's why they capped that, because the amount that you get back, Bill Gates, for example, is not going to get so much more just because he happens to have had a lot of earnings during his earning years.
Yeah. And you know, you can be a Democrat with a small D and say this is all well and good and we should be treated differently. But if you do have somebody like Elon Musk or Gates or Bezos or whatnot who make more money in a half an hour than most people do in a lifetime, it might be time to stretch that particular cord and say, you're going to pay Social Security on all you make. I'm sorry, life's not fair. There are social aspects in this and welfare aspects in this, and we're going to make this one of them.
And that has been part of the proposals that have been considered, taking a look at that. And as part of a comprehensive Social Security reform, that might be worth discussing.
You know, it's just started, this payroll deferral. But do you have any sense yet? Are you hearing from members or what as to how, what impact, if any, this is having on the military community?
Well, it is interesting. I happen to have a son-in-law that's an Army Ranger down at Fort Benning, and he has 6 years in the service. And so his, to give you an idea, just to put it in practical sense, his mid-month pay went up $190. And his end of month pay will go up $190. And so by the time he gets to January 1st, he will owe the government back an additional $1,540. Now, what's interesting, and the point that I made for him was on January 1st, it's not just that his pay will go back up $180, but in fact, the Social Security payment will go back on, and he will owe back the deferred Social Security taxes. So although he's gotten a 6% bump, that $180 bump every 2 weeks for these 4 months, starting in January, he's going to get a $360 increase. And so it's in the deductions, so like a $360 pay cut starting on January 1st. And so it's him, my daughter, and their three children that have really got to manage that well. The good news is I'm giving him a lot of advice, mm-hmm. but I'm concerned is that a lot of other people, unless they're listening to Federal News Radio and other outlets, don't understand that. And so they'll see a $360 swing in their salary on January 1st. And that's something that would be very difficult to deal with going forward.
That's very interesting. I have a son-in-law, too, who's an ex-Army Ranger. Oh, so we have that in common. Good folks, all of them. Yeah, that's what struck me immediately is they being the politicians, give you this break. It's a 6.2% raise every 2 weeks if you're a federal worker. And that looks fine and good. But then after 4 months of this, if we revert back to, quote, normal, they're going to have to pay it back. And they will. You will have had some additional income, a couple, maybe $100 a month, couple of $100 a month. But then when the bill comes due, even though you'll pay it off paycheck by paycheck, it just seems like a bigger amount of money. Obviously, it's the same, but it's one thing to be receiving and it's another to be shelling out.
That's right. And there'll be some mitigation because if Congress does, in fact, pass the Defense Authorization Act, there will likely be a little bit of a military raise, right now projected to be a 3% military raise. So it's kind of, 6% up and then 12% down, but 3% back up. And it puts a lot of uncertainty in the minds of military families that can be challenged with that.
It's got to. And of course, the civilians will be, right, according to the experts, lucky, quote, lucky to get 1% in January.
Yeah, no, that's right. And it's important to also mention who it does and doesn't apply to. The wage limits are the president specified in his memorandum of August 8th are if you earn $4,000 per pay period. So translating that to military and federal salaries, that's basically all enlisted service members. That is warrant officers through Chief Warrant Officer 4, and that's officers through majors or lieutenant commanders in the Navy and the Coast Guard. So people above that earn more than the $104,000 on an annual basis, mm-hmm. or $4,000 per pay period, and so they do not have any of their Social Security taxes, in fact, deferred. So if you are out there listening to this and you don't see your taxes deferred, it may be that you're fortunate enough to earn too much money and you're in a category where your taxes aren't deferred, which may actually be advantageous for you.
I'll bet a lot of people did not know that. Yeah. Well, it just seems to me, and again, without a political bone in my body in this subject because I know so little about it, but it just seems like this is setting Social Security up for something. For some kind of major change, either they're going to lose next year, they will not, by law, recoup the 4 months deferred or four right. months pay raise if you have, or they will, and if they don't, that will not help the Social Security financial situation. As you said, it's a relative drop in the bucket, but it's still a drop in a bucket that is filling up, and it just looks like this could be with us for a long time.
I think, well, and looking at the glass half full, it could cause people, because they're taking a look at Social Security, to actually look at some reasonable steps toward Social Security reform, such as the ones that you and I have discussed.
Okay. And you mentioned earlier, I believe, that it appears the vast majority of American employers, civilian and whatnot, are not doing this.
That is everything that I've seen from all the media reports. There are certainly some who may have, and there were some state governments who have decided to implement it. But in most cases, the ones that I know of personally and the emails that I've seen around and the media reports have been that many employers like me, like our organization, have decided not to implement it.
Okay, I want to take a short break here on Federal News Network, 1500 AM. We'll be right back. Hey, welcome back to Your Turn. Mike Causey here, and I'm talking with General Mike Meese, and he, fortunately for all concerned, knows an awful lot more about this payroll tax deferral than I do, and I think most of us do. And interesting to learn that it appears that the primary group in the United States that is participating in this payroll deferral, that is, you get a 6.2% pay raise, if you raise in quotes, because that Social Security payroll tax won't be collected for the next 4 months, but it is due to be repaid next year in 4 months. But that most of the people participating in it appear to be federal, active duty federal workers or military personnel. I don't know of any private companies, and I haven't checked many, but I don't know of any that have done this so far, and I did not understand how that could work. But this is something that can be done by executive order.
That's right. And again, the president does not have the authority to forgive taxes, but he does have the authority to defer when taxes are paid. And so in this memorandum that he issued on August 8th, again, the intent was to provide relief for individuals who are suffering under the COVID pandemic. And we know that military families, like many others, have had additional expenses. So you can understand the rationale for it. But the challenges are that unless it is forgiven after the election, and Congress is the only one that can forgive that, it will have to be paid back starting in January by the individuals.
Yeah, and again, the stress and strain on the anticipated income for Social Security, if you've got between 30 and 40 million people now are unemployed to some extent, which means they're not paying all or in some cases maybe any of their Social Security taxes. So this has, I would think, the potential for major ramifications not that far down the road.
No, I think you're right. And I obviously, whoever is elected in November and the Congress that's elected in November will be dealing with the ongoing challenges of COVID-19 and regardless of the vaccine and the economy recovering, and the substantial spending that has been made, not just in the deferral of this relatively small amount of Social Security taxes, but the overall CARES Act payments, the Paycheck Protection Program payments, the bailouts, very appropriate for all the various industries, has had a significant increase to our overall federal debt and deficit. And that's something that the new Congress is going to have to deal with in January, no matter who is elected.
Yeah, well, we touched on it a little bit earlier, but going back to that, what, if anything, should people be doing with this deferred money? And if it's 6.2%, you can pretty much do the math. Anybody save me could do the math and figure out how much more money they're going to be making every week or 2 weeks or how often you're paid. Is it possible, do you know, could people put this extra money, this 6.2%, or maybe some of it, at least some of it, into their thrift savings plan for the next 4 months?
Yeah, good. It's a good question. What you probably could do, and that's a very good strategy. What you could do is increase your deposit to your thrift savings plan, knowing that you now have an additional $200 a month, let's say, or $300 a month that you're able to spend on groceries. And that would put a little bit more money into your thrift savings plan. And then at the point at which you have to pay that back, you can put a little bit less into your thrift savings plan.
Yeah.
And if you can economize in the meantime, because as you and I have discussed on your show previously, the thrift savings plan is one of the most efficient ways for both military and civilian members to save. This is a great place to save that money. The only caution that I would have is obviously you can't take it out of your thrift savings plan if you're under 59 and a half. But if you just turn the dial back down in January, if you need to be able to repay that, this might be a good way to help you get into a savings program. Or, as I've told folks, put it into an emergency fund. If it turns out that this is forgiven, then you've really built up your emergency fund, and so that you can weather a storm, whether it's a pandemic or a family emergency or something else like that.
That's a really good idea. I've read, and I know you have, that the average American couldn't handle a bill, an extra bill of $400. I mean, it's that tight for so many people. It's interesting, too, this idea of putting it at least temporarily into the thrift savings plan, because one of the things you're doing here, the government offers a match of up to 5% for most current workers. Many aren't doing that. Some aren't doing anything at all. But if you're putting in 2 now, and this would allow you to put in 4%, then that means a 2% tax-deferred pay raise from the federal government as long as your contributions are higher. And many people, of course, everybody's got an eye on the stock market, but many people think that with its boom when we thought it was going to bust a situation, and now it's been failing for the last, not failing, but been going down for the last 5 weeks. You're investing, but you're investing at current prices. You're dollar cost averaging, and putting in 4 months, that would be what, eight weeks, all those weeks of extra pay, it could be a very beneficial thing, both in the immediate term, because you'd get the extra government match, but you are dollar cost averaging. So when it's down, you're buying lots of shares. When it's up, you're buying fewer shares, but you're not spending any more money.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right, Mike. And I think that that's the overall approach that we talk to all of our AFMA members about in terms of taking a long-term approach to your financial security. And when we see this kind of thing, it's not just a surprise. It's, well, how can I leverage this to either build up my emergency fund, increase my contributions to the thrift savings plan, prepare for something else? And as you mentioned, dollar cost averaging is a very good way to invest over the long run. And if you are prepared for these kinds of things, you can take advantage of this in the event that it's a windfall. And then if there's a financial pitfall in the future, whether it's a move, a coronavirus, or an appliance breaking, you're ready to deal with it.
You know, as I repeatedly say, I'm math challenged, and I'm not saying it to be modest or cute. I am math challenged. But I'm sure somebody like possibly you or somebody using our calculator on the Federal News website in the Nicole Ogrisco column could actually look ahead, say 4 months, saving 6.2% of salary, and as you said, putting that into an emergency fund. Do you have any idea, say for the average Fed or the average military person, how much money that would work out to be?
Yeah, to give you an idea, again, it depends upon rank, but sure. I use the example of my son-in-law for a major in the Army or a lieutenant commander in the Navy. That'd be about $500 a month, so you'd have an additional $2,000 by the end of December, that would be which is a pretty good emergency fund that would take care of an appliance breaking or a car breaking down or needing to go to an emergency for an ill relative. And that would be a very good thing to take place.
That's very interesting. You know, if say that average $2,000, different financial planners, Susie Orme, I think, recommends you have 80%. Obviously, the more you have in your emergency nest egg, the better. Some people have it down to 6 months. But if anybody that we know of practically could have an extra $2,000 sitting there in case and maybe even earning interest, that would be a very, very wise move.
Yeah, and if you set that aside and then you start to have to pay back, if it's forgiven, this is just found money. If it's not forgiven, then you start to pay it back. You've got the federal pay raise, whether it's 1% for civilians or 3% for the military. And if you constrain some of your spending in those first 4 months, it may turn out that, wow, you've got this $2,000 fund and you've been able to weather this adjustment, and you're much better off financially at the end of April because you've thought this through you've taken the advice from individuals, and you're better improving your financial independence and security.
Very good. Well, is anything you said that if you leave government service before this change, what happens?
You are responsible for paying that back, but your employer is responsible for tracking you down and getting that money from you. So my suspicion is that if a service member left the service in December, that the federal government would tack that on as a bill and find some way to withhold future wages. And so you can't just get out of it by leaving government service and thinking that you're not going to pay those deferred taxes. My guess is Uncle Sam will always find a way to get back to you.
Yeah, that's one thing you don't want to do. And I know this is total speculation, but looking ahead, regardless of who wins the White House, regardless of who controls the Congress, what do you think the odds are that this might be repealed or forgiven next year?
Forgiven. Another, mm-hmm. Yeah, I always try to minimize the chances because I don't want people to not save the money.
Don't bank on it. Right, right.
But if you were to look at it, I would imagine it would be in either candidate's incentive,
yeah,
because President Trump would want to do that to start out the new year and recognizing that this might be the last hump that we need to get over on the coronavirus. Certainly, if Vice President Biden is elected, he would not want to start out the new year. And so he would encourage his colleagues that he'll be working with in Congress to pass relief so that federal workers and the military doesn't just get a pay raise right as he's taking office. So I think there's a lot of incentives, but as you know, in this town, it's pretty hard to predict politics.
We'll take a rose-colored glasses viewpoint of it. You get the money, then you bank it into an emergency account, and then it's forgiven. So you're ahead of the game. So very interesting, very good show. Thank you so much, General Mike Meese. Really appreciate you doing this, and we'll hope to see you all here next week at Wednesday at 10 a.m. Have a good week and stay safe.